The eighth ranked team in the country needs 12 yards to avoid the upset. Cavaliers with three down linemen. Castellanos in the shotgun. Virginia brings the blitz. Castellanos in trouble. Hit as he throws. Hangs it up towards the end zone. And it's intercepted! Virginia has done it! All heaven has broken loose!
Hello and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. And what a weekend it was in Charlottesville. Virginia upsetting number 8 Florida State 46-38, double overtime. You say party like 1995, 2005. How about 2025? Because what a win for Virginia in Charlottesville. And I've got Jackie Franciulli from Wahoo's 247 joining me. Hopefully a little recovered from a very long but good night up there in Charlottesville at Scott Stadium.
Yeah, I think you actually work a lot harder after a win like that. It's been it's very busy because when you have a win like that, you have to reach out to recruits, and you can tell how excited that side of things kind of changed overnight. I mean, obviously those that verbally committed to the class are really excited. I mean, I thought it was fun to hear that they were all really locked into their games, but still had their parents update them during the game for the score. So it's been fun, busy.
I was going to say, Jackie's talked to give or take 100 different recruits just the past 24 hours, it feels like, seeing all the updates you're putting out there. I wanted to start this one off a little differently because normally we kind of get right into what happened in the game and break that down. We're going to do that, but I do want to start with just kind of setting the scene in this one, because I take some time after this one, because I talked about it on the post game show that we did there right after the game, of this being the best game that I've witnessed in person in college as a college football game. I took some time to think about it, and I still kind of came back to that conclusion, because while 2019 Virginia Tech game, that was great. It was obviously a huge win. This one was a better college football game, I felt like, with all the twists and turns going back and forth. I mean, gosh, double overtime. I mean, just kind of putting it all together, it doesn't get much better than what we saw on Saturday, I feel like.
No, for sure. I think what stood out too was just the overall chess game that the coaches put on, right? Because in the second quarter, you can argue that Virginia went away from the run a little bit too quickly, and that's where they kind of went into hole and forcing Chandler Morris to throw into those longer passes, which we kind of broke down on Wahoo 24/7, saying like, hey, it was the intermediate passes that won you the game, not those long ones. But then they went back to it, and kudos to Des Kitching. They realized that the mesh, Florida State had no answer for it. I mean, they realized where to hit Florida State, and they kind of went for it. I mean, they never deviated from that plan. Like, they saw it, and Florida State didn't adjust. And I think that's what stood out to me, was just how Virginia watched that film from Kent State, because that's where you kind of saw things from Florida State that maybe you could take advantage from, and used it well. And, I mean, it was an entertaining matchup. I think you kind of expected it with two offenses like this, but it was definitely one where you go, is this the turning point for UVA?
Yeah, as a program as a whole, not just this season. And obviously, you know, there's, you know, now they're ranked in the AP top 25. Now people are talking about ACC championship game odds and everything. It's a sharp turn from, and I made fun of it at the time, everyone going into that NC State game in week two was like, this is the biggest game of Tony Elliott's tenure. And I was like, well, it's the biggest game for now. I'm sure by the end of the season, we're going to have four or five more biggest games of Tony Elliott's tenure. I don't know if there's a bigger one than Florida State on Friday night, as far as just kind of what it means to the program. But there will be other big games. That's just kind of how this goes. Like, you know, you get further into the season, you know, things start to feel more and more important. You face some ranked teams. It's all about coming, you know, not getting too caught up on one thing. But the scenes afterwards, I mean, just watching it live, I don't think I fully appreciated that really it was the quickest field storm in, college sports history, because we don't see it that often with UVA because we haven't had games like that. They've stormed the field in 2019 twice against Florida State and against Virginia Tech. But this one just felt like they were right on it. And probably because the play was right there in that end zone, it felt so quick.
I mean, I want to see their 40 time because that was quite crazy. Just the scene of seeing Jason Pervard down grabbing the pick, and then as soon as he grabbed it and fell down, the storm of students just rushing the field, and then Donovan Platt, I don't know if he was celebrating the dog pile or he was just natural reaction to go over his teammate. To protect him, because when on video you see him look at the crowd, so you don't know, like, is he thinking just I'm going to celebrate with him or I'm looking at the crowd? But that was an unbelievable scene. I know just coming down the field, we usually don't have that many people in our way when we're going down the stairs to go for the post game press conference, but that was filled. People were going down there. I know recruits were going down there that were visiting. One of the recruits I talked to said, yeah, I just went down to the field to be see all the players and fans too. And that was quite a remarkable thing, like we went to the press room afterwards, but you just kept hearing the celebrations going on, and just hearing about the goalpost trying to get down. I mean, that was incredible, and you just see the emotions coming through if you go through the social medias of the players, of the family members. It was cathartic for these guys. I mean, if you're a Virginia program, I mean, they've been coming out on the wrong end of I don't know how many close games so far. I still remember the Miami double overtime loss that I felt like Virginia was the better team on that day, but they lost. I mean, this was cathartic for them. They won a close game and they didn't lose. I mean, they had it in their hands and they didn't lose it. So I think that's where I'm saying this could be a good turning point for the program.
Yeah, I think most fans were probably waiting for the other shoe to drop just because of recent history, but it never really did. I mean, Florida State would punch back, but Virginia seemed to always have an answer throughout this game. And you talk about some of the post-game scenes. I kind of sprinted down there I wanted to see kind of what it felt like on the field afterwards. So I got lost in the shuffle a little bit in the middle of the field. I wanted to see, could they bring down the goalposts? No, they could not. Those goalposts are built to not be brought down. They
They're not
tried,
Tennessee
though.
Ghost Posts. They're not Tennessee Ghost Posts.
Yeah, they had at one point at least three or four guys up on the goalpost trying to shake that thing down. And good on the Scott Stadium like music, because they were playing like the Harlem Shake and they were playing like all the music that was great to try to bring the goalpost down. There's one kid that was up there that like he seemed like the ringleader, had his shirt off, was just like, encouraging the fans below to like join him up there. Like I mean, they were having a good time. I saw pictures afterward. Chris Long was out there on the field celebrating. I saw Carla Williams. I mean, some of those posts with Carla, like she took a knee down on the field. I think Scott Pioli was the one that took that picture. Just how emotional she got. I also was reading from Yahoo Sports, Ross Dellinger was talking about the emotions that she had after that game, just kind of watching it. So, I mean, it was an emotional night for everyone. And it's kind of, I came away from that driving home and I was like, but it's only week five?
Week five. I know.
And there's
I
so
know.
much more season to go, but it does feel like such a big moment for the program.
Yeah, and you still need two more wins for a bowl game. So
I know.
it's kind of like you still have, I mean, work to do. You have your big ACC schedule. I mean, this is only their second ACC game. So it's like, okay, this was such a big win, but you still have work to do. It's kind of what Tony Elliott said in the post game presser.
Yeah, I love the metaphor there. It's like that you wanted to be in the driver's seat, you're in the driver's seat, and yeah, he kind of went on a whole car tangent there in the post game, but definitely good. I want to ask you, because you've been around for a little bit, you've covered a couple different teams, you covered Florida for a little bit, just as far as college games. I'll throw it out, just college games in general. Where would you put this one?
I would put it in my top four, probably. I've been two games at LSU at night, at Death Valley with Florida. So those games are kind of hard to beat just because of how many people are in the stands. And even the when they built when they beat Auburn that one year at the Swamp, I think they broke the record for the loudest game decibel level wise. So those kind of are up there for me, just because of that those magnitude there. But I think this one you can argue was the most emotional game I've ever covered,
Yeah.
because the other games, you just experience the fans and how loud the environment is, and there wasn't any field storming in those games that I covered. This one was my first legit field storming like this. And it was just it feels like this program has just been waiting for this moment on the football field. They've had it in basketball, but they've been waiting. They've had moments, like in 2019. I remember being on the other side covering the Gators for that bowl game, and it just felt like the fans were ready. That was their time, and they thought 2020 they can continue it. They thought 2021 they can continue it, and then they kind of started again. It was a new tenure. They needed to kind of go back and rebuild to fit the new coaching staff scheme and system. So I think this one was just different. I think this one was just, after everything that's happened around the UVA program the last few years, you felt that in the locker room.
Yeah, I would. It's definite top three for me. The only two that I could fathom to put above it are for basketball, Purdue, Virginia, in the Elite Eight. I mean, that it doesn't it just doesn't get better than that. That's the number one game I always rank or always reference, and then the national championship, just because it's the national championship. I mean, like, what can you do with that? But as far as home games for Virginia in any sport, I think this is number one. That it had a
I agree with that.
great atmosphere. The numbers were 50,000. I went into it and said a successful crowd is at least 50,000, because I think people, looking back, the JMU game that had around, I think it was 5,700 or 57,000, and then 2019 Florida State had 57, and then the Virginia Tech game that year had 52. So just getting back to that 50 range, I was like, that's going to be a success. But I mean, like, the student section, the Hill was incredible.
Packed.
Some of the best, I think that's the best I've seen the Hill in a long, long time. I
I
think
will
Eric.
say this is the most bought in I've seen the students
Yeah.
since I've been back here on the UVA beat. They've definitely bought in.
Yeah. And Eric Ward said the numbers there, it's the, I think it's the most students on average they've had a home game so far, and they've already had four of them. So, like, they got some proof of concept there. All right, let's get into the actual football now. We put out our Who's On Player of the Game pot poll after the game. A lot of different options, a lot of different ways you could go with this. I put in Chandler Morris, Jason Brevard, Jamari Taylor, and then I also put in the UVA offensive line. And how about that? UVA offensive line, give some love to the big boys up front, because boy, did they earn it after this one. They are the Who's On Players of the Game, I guess you could say. You're down Brady Wilson. Four other transfers are out injured. Drake Metcalf making his first start at Virginia at center. Kevin Wiginton making his first start overall at UVA. What do? They rush for 211 yards on Florida State, kind of imposed their will. Only allowed two sacks and zero quarterback hurries. Incredible game from that offensive line.
Yeah, actually, in my post game five takeaways, I actually, one of them, I said, I apologize for the offensive line. I didn't know about your game, because that was my big thing leading into the game, is what are they going to do with Brady Wilson out because of the calf strain? And I would have picked, like, we talked about this in the preseason. This was the game I thought Virginia was going to get the upset win. And at the end, I didn't pick Florida. I picked Florida State by 48-36. I picked Florida State, but because of this, because I thought, I did, it's not like I didn't have faith in Drake Metcalf going into center. What I didn't have faith is the health of the right side of the ball, because Kevin Wiginton was coming in from an ankle injury last week. He wasn't 100%. So I was like, is he going to be 100% in this week? And then all the injuries at the right tackle that is heavily noted in the course of the last few months. So, and even Ethan Sipe was questionable. And that's the guy you usually go in after Jack Whitmer. So for me, I was thinking, do they have the depth to handle a game that will be in a shootout environment? And I was wrong. I mean, they did. I mean, I think it was two sacks, but I wouldn't even put those two sacks on the O-line.
Neither of
One of
them were.
them, no, one of them was Chandler Morris running out of bounds, and the other one, it seemed like a miscommunication between Chandler Morris and Cam Ross. I mean, the O-line did its job. And Kevin Wiginton after the game said, you guys don't talk about Terry Heffernan enough. And even Mikhail Boley, the week before the game, when he talked to us, he said that you guys always talk about player development. You guys need to talk about coaching development, because they said that Terry Heffernan used the last offseason to talk to NFL teams and learn a little bit more. And he brought whatever he learned from his time in the offseason back. And what he's done with this O-line, I mean, I gave him my game ball this week. I said Terry
Sure.
Heffernan deserves the game ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Well deserved. Yeah, neither of those sacks were on the offensive line. It was just a tremendous game overall. And I think the biggest drive that kind of spoke it all was the drive that Chandler Morris got his hand busted up on a helmet, and then they went with 10 straight run plays. You look at that drive, it's nothing, no big plays. It's just continuous churning, running the football right down their throat, and then they get into the end zone with the Chandler Morris touchdown run. I mean, that is. You could not have done that with any of the past three UVA football teams. They didn't have the horsepower. And then to talk about, oh, we talked so much about this transfer portal class. There was one transfer from last year's transfer portal class on that offensive line, and that was Kevin Wigginton, who's the backup guard. Obviously, Mikhail Boley, Noah Josi, Jack Whitmer have all been in this program for years now. And then Drake Metcalf came in as a transfer, 2 years ago, but he's kind of been in the program for a little bit now. So it's not a spend a bunch of money on the offensive line and you get better results. It's, spend time on development and you get better results. And that's what we're seeing this year is, Mikhail Boley's having his best year. Noah Josi's having a great year. Jack Whitmer, former tight end. How many times have we talked about that guy's story? And we talked about, in the, Monroe Mills, Mikalen Thomas, the difference they were going to make. Well, you lose both of them pretty much for the season, and Jack Whitmer steps in at right tackle and has looked really good ever
I mean,
since.
I think he was the best pass blocker this week, according to
Wow.
Pro Football Focus. And last week, he also had this highest grade. I think it was an 83 against Pro Football Focus. So that's two back to back, really solid games for him. He's definitely developed into a good guy for pass blocking. And Wigginton was a good run blocker for Virginia. I mean, if you look back on film, they used him as their main blocker for Jamari Taylor for a few of those runs, including the one on 4th and 1 when they were driving down in that final quarter. I mean, kudos to the staff. I mean, the staff, I liked what Des Kitchings did with the O-line as well this week. He knew sometimes they needed an extra little boost, and they put Say Jennis there too, in those run plays. I mean, again, Des Kitchings deserves all the flowers. I gave Terry Heffernan a game ball, but I mean, you need to give Des Kitchings the, I guess, the game trophy or something, because that was an excellent schemed up game.
I can't speak enough about it, and we've talked about it. I feel like every week we come back and say, I mean, Des Kitchings had every critic in the world, coming after him last year, especially after that final game in Blacksburg. Like, I remember asking, Tony Elliott about how does he evaluate Des Kitchings, and it was kind of a, not a kind of awkward response, just because it's in the caught up in the emotions of the game and everything like that. And a lot of people were wondering about the contract status. I know, do you remember that going through FOIA requests trying to figure out what's happening with his contract, and then just to get to this point now where he's leading one of the top offenses in the country. I have some of the numbers here down below because I was going to talk about it later, but let's go ahead and talk about it now. Number 5 nationally in total offense, 8th in points per game, 6th in total points, 3rd in total yards. It's the most points a Virginia team has scored through 5 games since 1990. That's kind of the bar as far as Virginia offenses go back then. Sean Moore, Herman Moore, and the likes, one of the greatest teams in Virginia history. So I asked this question to you: where does this off best offense since dot dot dot?
As far as Virginia,
Yes.
okay. Well, unfortunately for me, I don't. I mean, I was here the first time during Mike London's era, so I don't know if I can talk
No
about
good
the. I was gonna
offenses
say I had great defenses though,
there.
during
Yeah.
that time, and then I saw. I mean, technically, to the 2019 offense, I saw it because I was covering the Gators, so I watched a
Sure.
lot of film of UVA. So I really liked that offense. And how they ran. The 2021 offense was very electric, but they were also mistake prone that year.
Mistake prone, and I kind of like call it empty calories because they put up a ton of yards, but they didn't always capitalize in the red zone. They don't always
Right.
finish drives.
So I would say from the games that I've watched, I would put it just in 2019, because that was the years that I watched. And obviously the last offense prior to that was when I was on the sideline for Virginia beating Miami in the Orange Bowl. And I mean, I saw a lot of points that day too, just the other way
There's
around.
a lot of reasons for that though. I come back to we've had some good offenses lately, but this offense is so balanced. They're one of three teams in the country right now that have 1200 yards, through the air and 1200 yards on the ground. Like they get it done in both phases of it. And that's something obviously we did not see during the Robert and I tenure because he was allergic to running the football. You're seeing they're able to do both, and it kind of just makes it like, well, what do you take away? Like, do you load the box up, try to stop Jamari Taylor, Xavier Brown, and this running game, or do you try to play deep and make Chandler Morris, kind of have to pick you apart? It's kind of pick your poison right now with this Virginia offense, and I think it's just it's a lot of the personnel, but it's a lot of the coaching. It's just kind of a mixture of everything. This offense is on it, but that definitely something to watch because everyone was like, oh, they only played Stanford or they only played Coastal or William and Mary, putting up these yards. Well, guess what? Now they played the number 8 team in the country and still looked really dang good out there with the football.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience reporting on the pregame of this, when you're just talking to other people or you're being a guest on the show, and they always referenced Virginia's season so far, and it's like, well, these numbers are from this. There's always an asterisk to it. Meanwhile, Florida State never got that asterisk, although they played two really easy opponents. And granted, they played Alabama. But they played two really easy opponents where they were able to get those numbers boosted, but there was never an asterisk to their offense. So that was for me, that was very interesting going into that Friday night game. Whenever I'm on the show, and their question is always like, yes, but what have you seen that could show that UVA can handle a better team? And I'm like, I mean, why are we?
Who he play?
I mean, like, can we do it for both sides here? Yeah, so
Yeah.
that was definitely an interesting experiment, I guess, as a way to handle it.
Yeah, the numbers proved out. Let's talk about the guy, number four, the quarterback, Chandler Morris, in this one. 26 to 35, 229 yards, five total touchdowns for the second straight week. It's the fourth time he's done that in his career. But just overall, though, I mean, the numbers are crazy. And I saw this stat. He's the third quarterback in the last 30 years to beat an AP top 10 opponent with 25 plus completions, two plus passing touchdowns, and three plus rushing touchdowns. The only other two guys to do that, Utah's Cam Rising in 2022, and then Oregon Heisman winner Marcus Mariota in 2014, and then Chandler Morris in 2025. Those are the only guys that have done that. So incredible numbers by him. He was 10th nationally in total QBR now. He's sixth this week is just his total score from this last game. Like, I mean, the numbers just they say the whole story, but they also don't even only tell half the story with just what this guy has meant to this program this year.
Yeah, I mean, you need a guy like that. And Virginia has missed someone that has a lot of football experience and that veteran leadership, that calming veteran leadership. Because for him, that second quarter could have gone a lot of different ways. I mean, this was a quarterback that was making great decisions. Up until this point, there was never a moment where we were questioning where he was throwing the ball. And he made some kind of iffy decisions on his interceptions. So you think, how is he going to handle this adversity? I mean, they were up 14-0, then suddenly Florida State was back 21-14. And they showed what they're made of. I mean, Chandler Morris kind of calmed everyone down, calmed himself down. Because I think you get that a little bit of as an athlete, you still have that nervous energy, kind of that vibe. I mean, you're facing the number eight team in the country, and you have a packed Scott Stadium for the first time that he's experienced. And you're on prime time, and everyone is focused on your game. So you probably still had a little bit of that, despite having a 14-0 lead. You're still kind of a little bit hesitant. So, but what he was able to do was lead this team back is is a testament to how far Virginia's offense has come. Because last year we had certain situations, and again, it's about an inexperienced quarterback, Anthony Calandria, where he was making decisions but not understanding the full grasp of the situation. I still point to that Maryland game where he ran as the clock was winding down. He scored the touchdown, but any other veteran quarterback would have looked at the clock and went out of bounds so they could figure out what's the next step. That's what Chandler Morris does. He understands what the situation is, where the ball is, where that first down marker is, and he looks downfield to see where his players are. And that's been the difference here. And you see that. He can talk about all the stats and everything. I think there was another post that says he had one of the highest QB ratings. And the thing that I point to is the intangibles that he brings to that offense because he understands those situations. I mean, Virginia won on situational football, and that was because of him.
The quote that sticks with me is what Tony Elliott said after the game. He's a warrior. You talk about he had three interceptions in this game. The first one was clearly on him. He just needed to throw the football away. And I talked to his dad, Chad Morris, former Arkansas head coach, SMU coach, offensive coordinator, Clemson. He knows football. And he was like, yeah, he needed to throw that football away. But just kind of his response and how the team just kind of just follows his lead after that. I mean, there's never any confidence wavering. Like they just kind of fell in line. And you look at that, drive I mentioned before where he hurts his hand and like just kind of toughs it out and gets the back to the sideline after he scores the touchdown. And he's like immediately throwing the football on the sidelines, being like, yeah, it's fine. We're good to go. Let's continue on with this thing. Yeah, my favorite quote from Chandler after the game was, "I'm a gunslinger, I take risks." That's what he does. He's gonna take risks. We talk about, the perfect comparison is the Baker Mayfield for him. Yeah, Baker Mayfield took the risks, and but he also got a lot of the rewards that came with some of those risks. You talk one of the biggest plays of the game was that Trell Harris, concentration to make that catch. That was a risk throwing that ball there with as close as the defender was on him. But you take risks and you get big rewards sometimes, and sometimes you get those interceptions and. But I just think overall it was just a really good complete game from Chandler Morris and just how he managed the team, managed the emotions. And my favorite was, afterwards UVA posted the video. He was just sitting on the bench as the whole field is just getting stormed. He's just like sitting there, kind of emotionless. And Taylor Lamb comes up to him and just grabs him off the bench, throws him on the field, and is like, "Look at this." And he just kind of let out a roar there, but that's just kind of that, just the calm demeanor that he has brought to this UVA offense this year.
No, it's made us such a big difference. And you can see how much the other offensive playmakers just build off of it. I
Yeah.
mean, if their general is confident, they're going to be confident. And he also has faith in them, right? I mean, those balls he's throwing because he has faith in Jamal Edrin to make that play. He has faith in Trell Harris to make that play. He has faith in Cam Ross. He has faith in his wide receivers. He has faith in his running backs. I think that's the difference. Everyone has faith in each other. I mean, they talk about being a brotherhood, but this locker room is, I think, the most united I've seen this team since I've been back.
Looking at the kind of bigger ACC picture, because it's fun. Why not? Is it Carson Beck at Miami and Chandler Morris right now, 1-2 in the ACC as far as quarterbacks? We saw Tommy Castellanos last week, and I think he's very much improved from the quarterback that we saw at Boston College. But I really like what Chandler Morris brings you, both as a passer and a runner right now.
Oh man, I'm gonna anger Florida State fans again, aren't I?
Don't talk about completion percentage.
Don't talk about completion percentage. Although Chandler Morris had the higher completion percentage. Yeah, that was fun. But no, I agree. I think Chandler Morris is opening people's eyes right now. I still think he's kind of under the radar, which is quite fascinating. Because I keep seeing all these lists of all these quarterbacks that are above him. I'm not saying he's a Heisman candidate because, but I was looking at all these quarterbacks that are just being discussion for that, and just all these quarterbacks are in discussion for the best quarterback, and he's not mentioned, which is very strange to me when you look at his stats and what he's been able to do at Virginia. I think this was a little bit of a coming out party for him. I think people are going to start taking notice. But I would argue him and Carson Beck are your two quarterbacks that are getting the most attention and will continue to do so because of what's around them. I think that's been the key. What Virginia has been able to do has been able to get him such a good cast around him that's going to showcase what Chandler can do.
What a just there's a couple other, I mean, there's so many different offensive plays through this game. One that we kind of mentioned, the Terrell Harris one, but that set up the Jamari Taylor
It's my
rushing
favorite play of the
touchdown.
game. That's
And
still
we
my
were
favorite
both
play.
like, we kind of like looked at each other. We're like, how did he just pop out of that and get into the end zone? Like, it was a Houdini-esque run there.
Right. Yeah, I actually made it in my takeaways. I made a verb and I said he Houdinied. That's my new verb for Jamari Taylor. And I actually was talking to somebody and they said, yeah, that is a perfect way to describe Jamari Taylor is Houdini, because of what he's been able to do so far this season. And that game, I mean, I heard the hit and I went back and I watched a replay and he got hit. It felt like when I was looking, it felt like the Florida State defender thought he got him and it was going for that big tackle play and then just kind of let him go. And then Jamari just rolled around and went out. I mean, even Mikhail Boley was shocked. It was funny because you saw Mikhail Boley there and then suddenly you see Jamari Taylor goes, he goes, whoa, and he kind of looks that way. So that was my favorite play. I mean, Jamari Taylor has just been fun to watch. He's a tough guy and he gets you the yards after that first initial contact. I mean, it takes about four or five guys to bring him down.
Yeah, it was truly impressive. The other one I want to bring up is the fourth down calls by Tony Elliott. I wrote in my notes just gutsy in all capital letters. Like the first one, he's at midfield, and then this, and I think that's the first one he goes to Jamari Taylor. They go to Jamari Taylor to pick up that first down at midfield. The second one, they go to that mesh route that, I mean, I think Virginia fans are becoming quite proficient in the mesh route because that is the golden child play right now for Virginia, is this mesh option route that they're running
I mean,
against
Florida
man
State couldn't
zone.
stop him. Florida
Florida
State could
State
not
couldn't
stop
stop
him.
it. I don't think anyone this year has stopped it, honestly. Like the only reason NC State, I guess, stopped it is because Des Kitching stopped calling it. That's the only reason. That's the only way people can stop it, is if they just don't call it anymore. But that throw to Cam Ross there and that fourth down, massive. Just so many big calls like that. But you know, Tony Elliott, just coaching without fear out there in those situations. Any other calls offensively? We're gonna get to defense here next, but any other calls offensively that stood out to you?
Well, it's kind of like goes back to the O-line. I mean, this is what happens when you have confidence in your O-line. I mean, a lot changes. I think that's been what's been harping on since their arrival was the O-line, the O-line, the O-line. And this is what happens when you believe your O-line can protect your quarterback. You can do a lot of fun things and you can, match up with the opponent the way you want to, which is sometimes before you had to disguise the weakness of the O-line and then you had to adjust your game plan and adjust what you can do accordingly. You don't have to do that now. And I think that's what we're seeing. And as far as plays, I mean, Chandler Morris's rushing touchdowns. I think that stood out just because of him showing that he understands what's going on. He sees that there is a chance, he makes the good decision and runs for it. I think you saw that a couple of times. I think he had, what, three rushing touchdowns, including the one in the second overtime. So I think that's what you're seeing. And I think those were stood out just because, again, what we talked about earlier was the reason why he was such a good quarterback. Was because he shrugged off his three picks and he made three touchdowns with his legs because of his situational awareness.
The other one I forgot to put in here, but the wheel route to Xavier Brown,
Oh yes,
that's the
that was a
same,
perfect wheel route, yeah.
that is the same exact play that they ran at NC State to
NC
try to
State.
win the game that he threw the interception on. And he, like this time, he just threw the perfect pass. He threw it exactly where it needed to go. Only player that could get it was Xavier Brown. And that's what I was saying after the NC State game. I was like, you got to just throw that one only where Jamari Taylor could get it. So, like, it's one of those resilient things. Like, to come back from that play kind of doomed you down there in Raleigh to actually that play helped you win this game up here in Charlottesville. So one of those full circle moments here. All right, I want to get to the defense here because I've gotten some comments after the game. John Rudzinski, I saw him on the field in the mass of that celebration. He was celebrating with family and friends and the like. I came away really impressed with this defensive performance. And you can read me the numbers. 514 total yards they gave up, 38 points, whatever numbers you want to put out there. I don't care. That Cavaliers defense changed the momentum of this game so many times. We talked about the interceptions that Chandler Morris had. You know, this defense was put in some rough positions a couple times in this game. And, you know, Florida State came back. They came back punching. This is the number one offense in the country through, you know, the first 4 weeks of the season. But I was really impressed with what this defense did. I think you can read me the numbers, but I think this is the best defensive performance they had on the year.
Yeah, this is when the box score doesn't tell you the story. So, I mean, Jason Pervard, that first pick. I mean, he came off the blitz. He was in Castellanos' face. He tipped the ball and then leapt and grabbed the ball. I mean, that was showed great athleticism there by him. And then obviously he got the pick that it's ingrained in our psyche now with all the pictures that you saw with the field storming coming up behind him. But then, you know, they had that fumble recovery. Fisher Kamek had a great start to the game, and he was
Yes.
getting pressure on Castellanos, and he was doing a great job. I mean, he helped recover that fumble that Anthony Britton got a hands on that. And I think this defense, this was kind of the bend not break defense that we often have seen under John Rudzinski when things have been successful. I mean, if you look at this game, yes, they had 514 total yards for Florida State. But did they allow those explosive plays that we've been seeing? They did not. That was a key difference. And yes, Florida State was able to move the ball on the ground. It was kind of they gave that up, but it's kind of like what I mentioned in our predictions. They were going to control Florida State. They weren't going to stop Florida State. They were going to control the damage. And you only need a couple stops when you have an offense like Virginia. And that's an excellent game plan. You're basically the defense is like, I did my job. Here's the keys for you to win the game. And that's why I liked their performance because they understand what they have. They know what they have and what they're up against. So they had fourth down stops. They had red zone stops. I mean, they forced Florida State to kick that field goal that went wide right. Those were the opportunities that allowed Virginia to come back. I mean, that middle eight, we talked about the offense side where they scored a touchdown. On the other side, the defense stopped Florida State in the first drive coming out of the half. So those were the crucial moments for this game. And I mean, technically, if you look back, this game should have never gone to overtime. I mean, it
Yeah.
was 2 minutes and 34 seconds left on the clock, and the defense made a stop and then says, here, offense, hold the ball like you do for 2 minutes and 30. And honestly, I thought that was it. Because the offense was controlling the ball so much, they just couldn't move the ball. And then Florida State came back and tied the game. But technically, the defense gave them the chance to win in regulation.
I think the defense multiple times throughout that game shifted momentum back. You talk about the forced fumble early. Anthony Britton got a paw on there, and Fisher came up with the fumble recovery. I think it's one of the better defensive line games. Mitchell Melton was in the backfield constantly. He was reading those read options really well. There's one drive where he corralled Castellanos on back-to-back read options in the backfield.
If he didn't have the club on his hand, it would have been a sack. That's what I'm adamant. I think he would have more sacks this year if he didn't have that on his hand. I think he's mentioned it too. He has to adjust how he plays with that thing on his hand.
Fisher K-Mac, you talked about his performance earlier in that game. Dan Rickert had a couple quarterback hurries. It was just overall, I thought, you know, three forced turnovers, two sacks, much better run defense in the second half. Just a really good showing overall for the defense. It gives me optimism that this is a unit going forward, that maybe against not the number one offense in the country, they could even do better going forward. So we'll see. But Jason Pervard, I mean, gosh, I mean, if that guy does nothing else in his Virginia career, he's going to be etched in stone in Virginia history with one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen with the tip pass in the red zone. But then also just one of the more iconic plays that you'll see in Virginia history, getting the interception to seal the game against Florida State. Like, I don't. he's been a guy that I've liked throughout the season, but now he's a guy that people are going to remember Jason Brevard because he made two of the biggest plays to help in this upset over Florida State.
No, I agree. And he took a while to adjust. I mean, to be fair, the whole secondary has a lot of new faces, so they had to adjust. And for him too, I mean, in the spring, yes, he was there, but because they had so little numbers at corner, he had to play corner for a lot of the time, not nickel. So most of his time at nickel has been in training camp, and then this season. So it's remarkable how far he's come. And this is what they were hoping for when they got him from the portal.
Big picture for the defense, did this game show you enough that you think that maybe they can figure some things out going forward? Like I said before, to have better performances as they go down the rest of the schedule. I mean, they will not face an offense as good as Florida State the rest of the season. I'm pretty sure. I think Louisville next is a pretty good offense. They have some good running backs, and they have a pretty decent quarterback, but I don't think there's another offense as dynamic and as many playmakers as Florida State had on their schedule.
No, I think it gave me a little bit more confidence in this defense. I always thought that they were going to be better than what they showed against NC State because they didn't have Cam Robinson there. And I know it's just one person, but that one person with that athleticism can free up so many other guys to make plays. And that's what you're slowly seeding. Because Stanford was his first game back, so you're seeing what he can do and what potential this defense can do with him there and him playing and getting game conditioning, and you're seeing other guys also coming back healthy. You have Antonio Clary who's getting healthy. He had an unfortunate where his first snap was
Oh
that
my
targeting
gosh.
call, but he'll be available. He doesn't have to miss a half because that was in the first half, so he's just missing the second half of the Florida State game. So he's coming back. I think people just need to realize that this is not a defense that's gonna get you low numbers. They're not gonna rank inside the top 20, top 10, or what have you in stats, right? What they're gonna do is what they did against Florida State. They're
No.
gonna give the offense the opportunity.
Yeah, and that's all this offense needs. When you got an offense like this, that's all they need. And that's what you go back to that 21 season, that's all that offense needed was a defense that would give them a
Right.
shot. They just didn't have
I
a
think you.
defense that would ever give them a
Right, I
shot.
think that's a very good comparison where what that team missed is what this team has. Is that what does Tony Elliott say in every single press conference? Complimentary football.
Yeah, exactly. And special teams too, got it done. Looking forward, we mentioned before, UVA ranked in the AP top 25 at number 24. First time since 2019, four ACC teams ranked: Miami, Georgia Tech, Florida State, and UVA. The ESPN analytics, they gave them a good shot to make it to the ACC championship game now. And so I want to wrap that all together because I want to ask, does this game change your outlook for the season at all? What should the expectations be going forward? Because both of us on our preseason pod had Florida State as the most our most likely game for an upset. I don't think either of us saw Florida State beating Alabama and being ranked number eight in the country in the
No.
preseason. So that was surprising to get to that point. But it makes the win even look even better now. So does it change anything for you in your greater season outlook?
I mean, I had them, I think it was 7 wins. That's where I
Seven
think I
and
had
five, yep.
7 and 5. That would mean they would need 3 wins. And I think I mean, looking at the schedule, I think Duke and Louisville are your two toughest opponents on paper right now. I also think Cal is much better than what
Yes.
we thought preseason, and going out west is going to be really,
Yeah.
really hard. So I still like my prediction of 7 wins, just because I think, and Duke has gotten a little bit better. So I think when I look at it, I still like that 7 wins, but looking at them and how they're playing, and with the bye week coming up and a chance to get some of these guys healthy. I think the opportunity in that section of the schedule, the second half of the schedule, will be great for Virginia. I'm not in the ACC championship train yet. But because this is kind of, I had said that they were going to win one of two, either Florida State or Louisville. The one thing in the Tony Elliott tenure is this is the first time they won two back-to-back games against Power Four opponents under Tony Elliott. So this would be the first time that they would win 3 in a row And this will be the first time that Virginia has won a top-ranked opponent and then followed it up with a win.
Yep.
So, because they've had that before. I mean, they beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill on the road, and then they lost, I believe that year was double overtime to Miami in Miami Gardens. And then after that was that, I think that was a disappointing Georgia Tech game right after that.
Yep.
I think that's how it went. So they, it's, and we've asked Tony Elliott, and he said this before, is learning from success and building from that. They have not showed me that. I know this is not a bit, this is a lot of a different team. I can't compare it to the last few years because I mean, there's over 50 new players, but as a program, they have not done that.
No, it's a totally fair evaluation. I had them at 8-4 before the season, but I had them at 8-4 because I thought they would win the NC State game. They did not win the NC State game, but I still strangely feel okay with the 8-4 right now. They got work to do. Like I said, there's so much excitement about this win, but it's week five. It's so early. There's so many games left on their schedule. A lot of ACC games to play. So it's going to be interesting in. I mean, if they win at Louisville this weekend, that kind of just blows all the predictions out of the water.
Yeah, if they win, and I, it's they're underdogs for this game, which I
Yep,
understand.
7-point underdog, yes.
7-point underdogs, which I get because they're going on a road to Louisville, but they've been so close at Louisville.
Yep.
And then in 2021, obviously they beat them, but this team has been close. I mean, 2 years ago, there was that one call that if it went the other way, it would have been a Virginia win. So, I mean, I could see them beating Louisville, and I actually probably will pick Virginia over Louisville this week.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet. I think I'd probably lean the same way.
Yeah,
But
because they have injuries on the in the running back room.
yeah, that Isaac Brown looked a little banged up last week against Pittsburgh. And that was a close game for Louisville against Pittsburgh. So really interesting week set up ahead. I know, Jackie, you're going to be in the great state of Kentucky on the
For the
Bourbon
first
Trail.
time.
Oh, first time. Okay. I got
Yeah, for
restaurant
the
recommendations to send you then, but it's gonna be it'll be a fun week out there, I'm sure. That's gonna do it for the Who's On podcast. We will have more later in this week. We'll talk some more football later in the week. I'll share that when that gets finalized. But Jackie, thanks again for hopping on here. A good reminder for everyone, go to Wahoo's 24/7. You got a lot of coverage up there. Anything coming up or just still talking to recruits?
We talked to over 20 recruits over the weekend, all the most of the commits, and we have a few that are from the 2027 class that recently visited, but we'll have more recruits because a lot of them were visiting Penn State this weekend. So those guys were unavailable this weekend. So we'll be caught talking to them over the course of the next few days.
Interesting times for sure in the recruiting world. But all right, that's going to do it for the Who's On podcast. We again, please subscribe, follow, like, comment, whatever you have to do on YouTube or a new YouTube page, Who's On podcast. We got great. A lot of y'all watch that Who's On post game report after the game. Thank you for that. And keep on following, subscribing, leave 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify. It always helps just people find the podcast and share the good news after a win like that. So thank you, and we will see you later in the week.